Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu. At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. You know, if you've felt recently like the world's major news stories just aren't making sense on their own.
Yeah, things like central banks hoarding gold on one hand.
And then the actual cost of a Thanksgiving turkey on the other. It feels disconnected.
It does.
Well, today we're taking a whole stack of sources, global finance, domestic politics, the stock market, and we're going to connect those dots. Our mission is really just to give you that shortcut to understanding the big structural cracks that are forming.
And we are starting at, the highest possible level of risk. It's a genuinely dramatic thesis from our sources.
Okay.
Economist Daniel Lacall argues that we are witnessing the structural decline of developed nations' fiat currencies in real time.
In real time.
And he says, you know, this story isn't new. It's actually depressingly predictable. History just shows that whenever governments exceed their credit limits and ignore the warnings, confidence is lost and the currency eventually collapses.
That is a staggering claim to start with. The idea that we're leading a declining empire of fiat power.
All from self-inflicted wounds.
Okay, so let's unpack that. In our first segment, let's get into this global debt sinkhole. When we talk about global public debt hitting, $102 trillion,
yeah.
What's the fundamental problem there?
It's a crisis of credibility. That's the core of the argument.
Credibility.
Yeah. Public debt, especially for a country that can print its own money, is basically just currency issuance. So when the debt gets reckless, the credibility of the issuer, the country itself, it just fades fast.
Then $102 trillion is.
Yeah.
That's a new record.
Yeah, and the historical record, yeah.
And the sources, they're not shy about pointing fingers, are they? They highlight Bidenomics in the U.S. as a case study.
A very clear one. The administration has run record deficits, increased spending by over $2 trillion.
And this was during a strong recovery.
Exactly. That's the core frustration. Instead of, tightening the belt during a good time, the spending just accelerated. And that kind of imprudent spending means developed economies have now breached three crucial limits.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting. Tell us about these three economic thresholds.
Absolutely. So the first is what they call the economic limit.
Economic limit.
It's a functional limit. Once government debt passes a certain point, piling on more of it just, it stops fueling real productive growth. You get diminishing returns.
So the GDP numbers might look okay.
They might look fine on paper, yeah. But underneath, productivity stalls, real wages stagnate. And people just don't feel any more prosperous. You're just trading future stability for accounting tricks today.
So we're paying a higher price for less and less real growth. What's the second limit?
That's the fiscal limit. As the debt gets bigger, the cost to finance it, the interest payments just explodes.
Right.
That plus mandatory spending on entitlements starts to crowd out everything else. Productive investment, infrastructure, research.
So even if inflation disappeared tomorrow, we'd still be in a bind, just paying the interest on the debt.
Precisely. And that brings us to the final limit, which is the one we all feel right now.
Inflationary limit.
Exactly. This is when all that money printing to finance government spending just completely erodes public confidence. Cumulative inflation starts to outpace wage growth. And, you get the affordability crisis we're living through.
The sources even call it a de facto gradual default, don't they?
They do. It's a subtle tax on anyone who saves money.
So if these major nations are crossing these red lines, How are the world's central banks reacting?
They are acting decisively. We're seeing what the sources are calling an unprecedented wave of gold purchases.
They're running for cover.
They're running for an asset that is nobody else's liability. The data is clear. According to the IMF, the U.S. dollar share of global reserves is drifting down toward the high 50s.
So gold is actually overtaking currencies?
For the first time in 40 years, yeah. Gold has overtaken both the U.S. dollar and the euro as the main reserve asset for some central banks. The numbers are huge.
Oh, huge.
Net buying was over 1,100 tons in 2022, and it stayed above 1,000 tons in 23 and 24. That is more than double the average from the previous decade.
Astonishing. But wait, the dollar still accounts for, what, 89% of global transactions?
It does.
So is this gold buying just a hedge, or is it a real immediate threat?
It's an important question. It's not an imminent collapse, but it is a major structural shift.
Right.
The buying is driven by worries over inflation, financial stability, and solvency. That's the key word. They are just not comfortable holding their peers' debt anymore. So we're moving toward a hybrid system.
Oh, a hybrid system.
Yeah. The dollar is still king for transactions, but it's going to coexist with a much bigger allocation to gold and probably decentralized crypto too. The empire is still there, but it's changing.
Okay, when we talk about $102 trillion in debt, it can feel abstract, but the impact isn't abstract at all, is it? Which brings us to our second segment, inflation, politics, and the very charged topic of Thanksgiving dinner.
This is where the macro instability lands right on the kitchen table, and it created this really weird contradiction in the data this holiday season.
Right, you had big retailers with these aggressive promotions, dinner bundles for $20, $50.
And the American Farm Bureau Federation claimed the average dinner was cheaper for the third straight year, around $55.
Which sounds great. Like, inflation is totally under control. But that was masking a huge price problem with the main event, the turkey.
Absolutely. The fine print is everything. Avian flu has just decimated the U.S. turkey flock. It's at its smallest size in 40 years.
Wow.
So wholesale turkey prices shot up roughly 75% year over year. The retail price for a typical bird jumped over 25%, about $31.
So the promotions were basically a loss leader to hide the fact that the core ingredient was way more expensive.
Exactly. And this contradiction became a huge political football. Kevin Hassett, a prominent economic policy chief, he went out and defended the claim that a big retailer's meal package was cheaper.
But it wasn't the same package, was it?
Not even close. Critics jumped on it immediately. The lower price was because it had fewer products, smaller sizes, and 15% generic brands. It wasn't an apples-to-apples comparison.
So why would he defend something so obviously flawed? Does that just show how desperate the political need is to declare victory over inflation?
It speaks volumes, doesn't it? Hassett tried to deflect. He called the criticism elitist, said his critics acted as if having a generic something is a crime for ordinary folks.
Trying to frame it as being out of touch.
Right. But the pushback, a lot of it from just regular people on social media, wasn't elitist at all. It was just factual.
Yeah. You can't claim prices are down if you're not comparing the same things. A $10 savings in a smaller bundle doesn't solve a two-year cost of living crisis.
That is the crux of it. The whole conversation is just so polarized now. Even something like the traditional turkey pardoning ceremony.
Right.
The sources remind us President Trump used that moment, pardoning Goblin Waddle, to suggest a Ukraine-Russia peace deal was very close and to, you know, criticize his predecessor. Every single moment is a political platform.
That's a powerful segue. Let's move from that political capital to capital markets in segment three, because they also show this. Illusion of strength, hiding deep fragility.
A total illusion.
I mean, the indices have had a massive rally since April. S&P 500 up 33%, NASDAQ up 46%. It sounds like euphoria.
It looks like euphoria, but it's so concentrated. It's almost entirely AI and the mega cap tech stocks. If you just look at the headline index, the drawdowns have been tiny, but that is not the real story.
Okay, so what's the risk hiding under the surface?
The devastating drawdown for the average stock. While the index was flying, the average member maximum drawdown was, well, it was huge. For the S&P 500, the average stock fell 18% at some point.
18%.
And for the NASDAQ, it was a punishing 41%.
Wow. 41% for the average NASDAQ stock. That's a bear market for most of the economy that nobody even noticed.
Exactly. The sources call this lack of breadth halitosis. It looks healthy on the outside, but it's rotten underneath. Only 17% of S&P 500 stocks actually outperformed the index over the last 6 months.
A very narrow, very fragile advance.
And that fragility has triggered a really stark rotation recently. The leadership that drove the market all year just vanished in November.
A huge reversal.
A huge reversal. Information technology, the runaway winner for most of the year, suddenly became the worst performer. It dropped almost 9% month to date.
And what took its place?
Healthcare. It was a major laggard all year. Then suddenly it jumped to the top spot in November, up over 6%.
So investors are rotating out of that narrow AI trade and into more defensive sectors. Healthcare, utilities, energy.
Correct. Utilities and energy now have the strongest breadth. It suggests the market is getting wary. The tactical advice from this is to, you know, focus on factors, fundamentals, over just pure momentum.
Which is funny, because you recommend fading taking profits in unprofitable small caps. Yet the unprofitable 40% of the Russell 2000 is up nearly 46% since April.
It just shows that these speculative pockets still exist.
But they're vulnerable.
Incredibly vulnerable. When you see a rotation this sharp, you have to focus on quality. You know, earnings growth, reasonable valuation, companies that can actually withstand these huge macro shifts.
Okay, let's pivot now to our last segment, where we see that same zero-sum fragility playing out on the domestic policy front, the healthcare gridlock.
Right, and this is all about the Affordable Care Act subsidies.
A looming political time bomb.
It really is.
Yeah.
These enhanced ACA subsidies, they're set to expire soon. If they lapse, premiums could just skyrocket for millions of people. It could throw the whole insurance market into chaos.
And renewing them needs bipartisan support to get past the Senate filibuster. But the whole thing has hit an ideological wall.
A massive wall.
And that wall is abortion restrictions, which the GOP sees as a red line.
Absolutely. A broad swath of the GOP says this is a must-have. They are demanding that any insurance plan getting a federal subsidy be prohibited from covering abortion services.
So applying the Hyde Amendment to the entire ACA marketplace.
That's the goal. And it's a powerful political weapon, especially now. The expiring subsidies give them a ton of leverage over what is basically a must-pass spending item.
A high-stakes moment, for sure.
It is. And the White House tried to just skirt the issue entirely. Their proposal had some conservative limits, like a high-income cutoff for subsidies, but it completely excluded the abortion issue.
Which, ironically, just made it a bigger problem.
Precisely. The silence was meant to avoid attention, but it just focused the opposition. Meanwhile, the Democrats are equally dug in. They say any abortion restrictions are a non-starter, so you have paralysis.
And this gridlock has immediate real-world consequences for states right now.
It does. Currently, the ACA lets states decide on abortion coverage. 25 states either allow or require it. If the GOP restrictions pass, those states would have to change their laws or risk losing billions in federal subsidies.
It's just,
yeah.
It shows how hard it is to solve a basic funding crisis when it runs into these non-negotiable political and moral lines.
It really does.
It feels like everything we've looked at today,
yeah,
global finance, consumer costs, the market, domestic policy, it all points to the same theme.
A structural lack of resources.
Exactly. Whether those resources are fiscal credibility or political capital or even just market depth, there's not enough to solve the big problems.
That's a synthesis we're left with, isn't it? We've gone from the risks in fiat money and the flight to gold, to the painful inflation hitting your grocery bill, to the fragile equity market, and finally to total paralysis in core domestic policy. All these systems are under pressure at the same time.
So let's leave you with a provocative thought that really ties all of this together. If that massive global public debt and the loss of confidence in fiat money, if that reflects a kind of structural exhaustion of national resources and credibility, how does that fiscal unsustainability then stop governments from being able to navigate major political crises?
Think about it. Whether it's securing a complex international peace deal, like the Ukraine-Russia situation mentioned in our sources, or breaking a critical domestic stalemate like the ACA subsidies, every single solution relies on future funding promises.
And political compromise.
And political compromise. So what happens when the political capital, the willingness to give ground runs out at the exact same moment the fiscal capital, the ability to actually pay for the solution, also runs out.
You're left suspended.
You are. Suspended in a state of high fragility where every single crisis becomes existential